Imagine for a second that your blood vessels are like the plumbing in an old house.
Oh, that's a great way to picture it.
Right. Over time, depending on what you're pouring down the drain, this rust just starts building up along the inner walls. And that rust, well, that represents LDL cholesterol.
Exactly. It's totally silent.
Yeah, a silent threat with absolutely zero symptoms, you know, no warning bells. It's just quietly narrowing the pipes until, bam, something bursts.
Which is a terrifying thought.
It really is. But what if you could literally send in microscopic scrubbing bubbles to actively dissolve that rust and just carry it away?
I mean, the crazy thing is you actually can. That is the biological reality of how HDL cholesterol works against LDL. And the balance between the two, well, it's entirely up to you.
That is just so empowering.
Welcome to the Pitcott Podcast. I am your host, Annabelle Pitcott, and sitting across the table today is our resident safety and design expert, Bill Pitcott.
It is so great to be here.
We have an incredibly vital deep dive lined up for you today, exploring the actual biochemistry of your cardiovascular system.
Yes, we do. And before we jump into those mechanisms, I want to explicitly mention that today's deeply informative material comes directly from the best-selling ebooks available on the Pitcott ebook store.
They are fantastic resources.
Oh, absolutely incredible. You really need to check them out. Just visit www.pitcott.com/books to download.
And hey, we also want to ask you to subscribe to our channel if you haven't. Activate a notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. And don't forget to click on the stars below and give us a rating.
Yes, please do.
We truly appreciate you giving us a 5-star rating to propel this podcast to help others too.
Thank you so much for that. All right, let's get into today's mission, which is completely demystifying cholesterol using our amazing Pitcott sources.
It's about time we did this.
Right. For decades, I mean, hearing the word cholesterol at a routine doctor's checkup felt like a terrifying verdict. We were basically trained to view it as a poison.
Yeah, but that is a fundamental misunderstanding of human biology. I mean, cholesterol itself is not a poison at all.
Wait, it's not?
No, not at all. It's a structural necessity. Every single cell membrane in your body relies on cholesterol for stability.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Your body uses it to synthesize vitamin D and even crucial hormones like testosterone and estrogen. You literally cannot survive without it.
So the substance itself isn't the enemy.
Exactly. The crisis only really begins when the transport mechanisms just kind of fall out of balance.
Okay, let's unpack this transport mechanism, because this is where the whole rust and scrubbing bubbles analogy really comes into play.
Right.
If we want to fix the rust, we have to look at what is sitting on our plates every day.
We do. Step one is definitely protein.
Right. Our sources point directly at protein choices as step one, specifically red meat like beef, pork, and lamb. Wait, so I can still enjoy a good steak? I just have to stop treating it like an everyday given.
Huh. Yeah, exactly. You don't have to banish it entirely, but treating it like a daily staple is a huge problem.
Because of the fat.
Yes, the dense concentration of saturated fat. To understand why that matters, we really have to look at the liver.
The liver is like the command center for all this, right?
It is the central hub for cholesterol management. When you consume high amounts of saturated fat, it chemically alters how your liver functions. It essentially downregulates or turns off the LDL receptors on the surface of your liver cells.
Wait, if the liver turns off its receptors, doesn't that mean it stops pulling the bad cholesterol out of the blood?
Precisely. The liver is supposed to clear that LDL from circulation, but when saturated fat suppresses those receptors, the LDL just has nowhere to go.
It's just trapped.
Trapped in the bloodstream. It continuously circulates, it oxidizes, and it eventually embeds itself into your arterial walls as plaque.
So treating a steak like an everyday staple is essentially boarding up the liver's natural filtration doors. That's a scary visual.
It really is. So the most powerful dietary pivot you can make here is swapping out that red meat for oily fish stuff like salmon, mackerel, sardines, or trout at least twice a week.
Okay, I have always found that counterintuitive. Mm. We're trying to lower the fat in our blood, so the solution is to eat a fatty piece of fish. How does adding fat fix the rust problem?
I know it sounds backwards, but it comes down to the architecture of the fat molecules. Oily fish delivers omega-3 fatty acids, specifically EPA and DHA.
and they behave differently.
Entirely differently. Unlike saturated fat, omega-3s do not suppress your liver's LDL receptors. Instead, they operate on a totally different pathway.
Oh, interesting. What do they do?
They drastically lower the production of triglycerides, which is another type of blood lipid. And, maybe more importantly, they fundamentally alter cell membranes to reduce systemic inflammation.
So they calm things down.
Right. Because when your arteries are inflamed, they become sticky and they catch more of that LDL rust. Omega-3s cool that inflammation down, making the arterial walls slick and resistant to plaque buildup.
Wow, so the American Heart Association explicitly backing this twice-a-week fish rule makes total sense.
Mm-hmm.
The cardiovascular data is just staggering. It's basically a vastly smarter game plan.
Absolutely.
And for those looking at plant-based options, the sources mention that lentil stews and chickpea curries do the exact same heavy lifting, but without the saturated fat penalty.
Yeah, legumes are incredible. And that actually leads directly into the broader conversation about fats, which is step two in re-engineering the plate.
Right, because the 1990s diet culture really convinced everyone that, like, all fat was inherently dangerous.
It was a disaster. But the wrong kind of fat is the enemy, not fat itself. We just covered saturated fats like butter, full-fat dairy, and palm oil blinding the liver's receptors.
But then the source material highlights trans fats as the absolute worst offender, right?
Yeah.
Hiding in all those cheap baked goods and fried foods.
Oh, trans fats are brutal. They're an industrial creation. Food manufacturers basically take liquid vegetable oils and bombard them with hydrogen gas to make them solid at room temperature.
Partial hydrogenation, right?
Exactly. And your body just lacks the necessary enzymes to efficiently metabolize these synthetic fat molecules.
So they just linger in the body.
They linger, and they deliver this catastrophic double hit. First, they aggressively drive up the LDL rust in your system.
And a second hit.
Simultaneously, they destroy your HDL, the scrubbing bubbles. They inhibit the synthesis of the very mechanism designed to clean your arteries.
That is genuinely terrifying.
Yeah.
It means a cheap donut is literally dismantling your body's self-cleaning system.
It really is.
So to counteract this, our sources emphasize protective unsaturated fats. We're talking avocados, seeds, and extra virgin olive oil. I mean, if you look at the Mediterranean diet, it's entirely built on replacing saturated dairy fats with olive oil and nuts.
And the clinical outcomes of the Mediterranean diet prove that fat quality totally dictates cardiovascular health. Take walnuts, for example.
I love walnuts. The source recommends a small daily handful.
Yes, just a handful. Walnuts are uniquely high in alpha-linolenic acid, which is a plant-based omega-3. And they also contain specific plant sterols that literally compete with cholesterol for absorption in the digestive tract.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Let's follow that absorption concept. Because if we've stopped adding the bad stuff, how do we actively pull the existing bad cholesterol out of the body?
That brings us to step three, soluble fiber.
Right, soluble fiber. Our sources point to this as the ultimate tool.
Honestly, it's arguably the most brilliant mechanical intervention in nutritional science. Most people just think of fiber for, you know, digestive regularity.
Yeah, bathroom stuff.
Exactly. Haha. But its cardiovascular role is entirely different.
The text mentions a daily goal of 25 to 30 grams of total fiber, which, let's be honest, most people completely fail to hit. Can you explain the actual mechanism here? Because the idea that eating a bowl of oats can lower blood cholesterol sounds like a late night infomercial promise.
Haha. It does sound like magic, but it's hard science. It all involves bile acids.
Okay, break that down for me.
So, your liver requires cholesterol to manufacture bile acids, which are secreted into your digestive tract to help you digest fats. Normally, your body is highly efficient. It reabsorbs those bile acids further down the intestine and recycles them.
So it's like a closed loop.
A completely closed loop. But soluble fiber disrupts that loop. When you consume soluble fiber, like the beta-glucan found in steel-cut oats, it dissolves in your stomach water and forms this thick, viscous gel.
A gel. In your stomach.
Yeah. And as this gel moves through your digestive tract, it acts like a sponge, physically binding to the cholesterol-rich bile acids.
Ooh. So the body can't reabsorb them.
Exactly. The fiber traps the bile acids, and they are just excreted as waste. Now, your liver detects a sudden shortage of bile.
And it panics.
Sort of. To manufacture more bile, it is forced to pull LDL cholesterol straight out of your bloodstream.
Wow. That is an incredible biological hack. You are essentially tricking your liver into vacuuming the rust out of your blood just to replace the bile you flushed away.
That is exactly why a morning bowl of oats is so medicinal. Provided, of course, you avoid those sugary instant packets that spike your insulin.
Oh, absolutely. And black beans operate on the same principle, right? They offer a massive 15 grams of fiber per cup.
Yes. The Canadian Medical Association Journal actually published data showing that just one daily serving of legumes drops LDL by 5% purely through this bile-binding mechanism.
That's huge for just one serving. Okay, we have to talk about superfoods next, specifically regarding oxidation. The Pipcot source mentions berries, blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, as critical tools because of their anthocyanins.
Very important compounds.
Earlier, you mentioned that LDL becomes particularly dangerous when it oxidizes. What does that actually mean in the body?
Think of a sliced apple sitting on a kitchen counter. The oxygen in the air reacts with the apple's tissue, turning it brown and mushy. That is oxidation.
Right, it looks awful.
Yeah, and in your bloodstream, free radicals, which are unstable molecules, attack the circulating LDL cholesterol. When LDL oxidizes, it becomes highly inflammatory. Your immune system detects this oxidized LDL as a foreign invader and sends macrophages, a type of white blood cell, to consume it.
The immune system attacks the oxidized cholesterol.
It does. But the macrophages gorge themselves on the oxidized LDL until they literally die, turning into what we call foam cells.
Foam cells.
Yeah, and these dead foam cells accumulate and form the actual physical core of an arterial plaque.
That completely changes the picture for me. It's not just like fat floating around. It is an immune system graveyard clogging the pipes. And the anthocyanins in berries stop this.
They do. Anthocyanins are powerful antioxidants. They circulate in the blood and willingly donate electrons to those unstable free radicals, neutralizing them before they can even oxidize the LDL.
So berries are like the squeeze of lemon juice that stops the apple from turning brown. That makes so much sense. The sources also highlight dark leafy greens for lutein and nitrates, and green tea for an antioxidant called EGCG. But I have to ask about the most surprising item on the list. Dark chocolate.
Haha. Everyone's favorite part of the list.
Oh, 100%. But the text sets a strict rule of 70% cacao or higher. Why does milk chocolate fail here?
Because it's just a completely different chemical profile. High percentage cacao is exceptionally rich in flavonoids. These stimulate the endothelial lining of your arteries to produce nitric oxide.
And nitric oxide is good.
Very good. It signals the arterial walls to relax and widen, lowering blood pressure and improving flow. Milk chocolate, however, is saturated with refined sugar and dairy fat.
So it does the opposite.
Right. The insulin spike from the sugar triggers inflammation that completely neutralizes any potential benefit from the trace amounts of cacao.
I appreciate the clarification. So a small square of 70% dark chocolate is a functional tool. A candy bar is just a liability. Another functional tool mentioned is a specific garlic trick. The text says we must crush fresh garlic and walk away for 10 minutes before cooking it. So we literally just crush the garlic and walk away for 10 minutes to activate it. That's kitchen magic.
Uh-huh. It feels like magic, but it's an enzymatic reaction. Inside a clove of garlic, there's a compound called alynase. And in a totally separate compartment, there's an enzyme called alynase.
Okay.
When you physically crush or slice the garlic, you break those cellular walls, allowing the two to mix.
And they create something new.
Yes. They synthesize a powerful cardiovascular compound called allicin, which is proven to lower blood pressure and lipid levels. But this chemical reaction requires oxygen and about 10 minutes to reach maximum concentration.
So if I just chop it and toss it in the pan?
If you immediately throw the freshly chopped garlic into a hot frying pan, the heat instantly denatures the enzyme and you completely halt the production of allicin.
Wow. 10 minutes of patience changes the entire medicinal profile of the meal. And speaking of the frying pan, the method of cooking is step 4 in our source outline. Heating food improperly can literally sabotage the healthiest ingredients.
It's so true. If you take a nutrient-dense vegetable and drop it into a deep fryer, you are doing immense biological damage.
Why is deep frying so bad?
Deep frying requires oils to be held at incredibly high temperatures for extended periods. This heat just breaks down the fat molecules, generating massive amounts of free radicals and creating trans fats right there in the vat.
Oh, man. It's the equivalent of taking the time to detail and polish a vintage car and then immediately driving it through a mud pit. The cooking method matters just as much as the ingredient.
That's a perfect analogy.
So the alternatives from the text are baking, grilling, steaming, or using an air fryer, right? To achieve that texture without the chemical degradation of the oil.
Yeah, exactly. The sources give great examples, like roasted sweet potato with smoked paprika or baked salmon with a mustard cress.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah.
And what about when we do use oil?
Extra virgin olive oil remains the gold standard because of its high polyphenol count. Polyphenols protect the oil from heat damage up to its smoke point. However, if you are searing at very high heat, avocado oil provides a remarkably stable alternative.
We should also touch on the wellness halo surrounding coconut oil. I mean, the marketing implies it's a superfood, but our Pidcot text strongly warns against it.
Yeah, the marketing definitely outpaced the science there. Coconut oil is approximately 80 to 90% saturated fat.
Which is huge.
It's significantly higher than butter or beef fat. While it does raise HDL, it concurrently drives up LDL levels. From a strict lipid management perspective, swapping it for olive oil yields vastly superior blood panels. Palm oil is the same story.
That is such a crucial distinction. Now, before we step out of the safety of the kitchen to navigate the hidden traps of grocery stores and restaurants, let's pause for a moment.
Good idea.
If you are finding this deep dive valuable, please head over to www.pitcod.com. You can find all sorts of incredible resources there.
And while you are listening, please subscribe to our channel if you haven't, and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads.
Also, press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. And don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating.
All right, let's talk about surviving the outside world. Your kitchen is a controlled environment, but the grocery aisles are engineered to confuse you.
Oh, completely. I always approach a nutritional label as a legally binding contract. The front of the package is just advertising, you know? Bright fonts declaring all natural or low cholesterol. It is basically meaningless.
Pure marketing.
You have to flip the box over and read the fine print. Our sources give us the exact mathematical benchmarks we need.
They do. The first metric to scan for is saturated fat. Your benchmark is under 1.5 grams of saturated fat per 100 grams of product.
And if it's over that?
If it exceeds that, it's heavily contributing to that liver receptor shutdown we talked about earlier.
Okay, got it. For fiber, the counterbalance, we are looking for anything above 3 grams per 100 grams. And what about the ingredients list itself?
You are hunting for the phrase partially hydrogenated? As we discussed, that is the food industry's covert terminology for synthetic trans fats.
But what if the box says zero trans fats?
Even if the nutritional panel claims zero trans fats, a legal loophole allows them to round down if it's under half a gram per serving. But if you see partially hydrogenated in the ingredients, the poison is in there.
That is so deceptive. Those tiny half grams compound dangerously over a year, and the same defensive strategy is required at restaurants.
Definitely. Eating out is step five.
Right. The economics of dining out dictate that chefs rely on heavy butter, cream, and massive portion sizes just to trigger dopamine and make you feel like you received value for your money.
Yeah, a single cream-based pasta dish can easily deliver 3 days' worth of saturated fat in one sitting. It's wild.
So what's the tactical approach here?
Aggressive substitution. Request proteins to be grilled rather than pan-fried. Insist that all sauces and dressings be served on the side, allowing you to control the fat application.
My personal favorite strategy from the text is to ask the waiter for a to-go box right alongside the meal. I immediately box up half the entree before taking a single bite.
That's a great habit.
It just removes the psychological pressure to clear the massive plate and protects your lipid numbers from an unnecessary spike. Also, choosing veg-based starters helps so much.
Absolutely. And that leads to the ninth step outlined in our materials, navigating alcohol. This is a highly nuanced topic, often really simplified by headlines claiming red wine is good for the heart.
Right. The source confirms that resveratrol, which is an antioxidant in red wine, has minor associations with raised HDL levels. But the dosage curve is razor thin.
Extremely thin.
The strict ceiling is one drink per day for women and two for men. What happens biochemically the moment we cross that threshold?
Well, the liver essentially enters triage mode. The human body registers ethanol as an acute toxin. When you drink, your liver drops every other metabolic function, including lipid management, just to process the alcohol into acetate so it can be burned off.
Wait, it stops managing cholesterol entirely just to put out the alcohol fire.
Precisely. And because lipid metabolism halts, the excess fatty acids circulating in your blood are rapidly repackaged into triglycerides and stored as fat.
Wow.
Yeah, this triglyceride spike runs concurrently with a sharp increase in LDL rust. Furthermore, alcohol is calorically dense, promoting visceral fat gain around the organs, which fuels even more systemic inflammation.
So if you don't currently drink, there is zero biological justification to start for heart health. You can acquire those identical polyphenols from purple grape juice, or just elevate the evening with sparkling water and citrus.
Exactly. Now, as we move into the final stage of our deep dive, we must zoom out. Diet dictates what enters the bloodstream, but physical movement, mental state, and medical intervention dictate how the body actually processes it.
So what does this all mean? Let's talk about exercise. Step 6. I always assumed exercise just burned calories, but the mechanism linking muscle movement to cholesterol is remarkable.
It's fascinating.
The source advocates for 30 minutes of aerobic activity 5 days a week. How does elevating the heart rate specifically alter the rest and scrubbing bubbles equation?
It accelerates a process called reverse cholesterol transport. Think of HDL, your scrubbing bubbles, as empty taxicabs.
Okay, taxi.
Their job is to travel to peripheral tissues, pick up excess LDL rust, and drive it back to the liver for disposal. Aerobic exercise, like brisk walking, cycling, or dancing in the kitchen, physiologically stimulates your body to manufacture larger, more efficient HDL particles.
It puts more taxis on the road.
And makes them better at picking up passengers. Concurrently, resistance training like lifting weights or doing bodyweight squats twice a week builds lean muscle tissue.
And muscle is good for cholesterol.
Yes, muscle is highly metabolically active. Having more of it dramatically improves your cellular sensitivity to insulin, keeping blood sugar stable and preventing the liver from synthesizing excess lipids.
But the body is a complete ecosystem, which brings us to the psychological component.
Mm.
This was the most startling revelation for me in the text. Is it really true that just being constantly stressed out can ruin my cholesterol numbers, even if my diet is absolutely perfect?
It is not just possible, it is a well-documented physiological cascade. When you experience chronic stress, your adrenal glands continuously pump out cortisol, the primary fight-or-flight hormone.
From an evolutionary standpoint, cortisol is supposed to help us run from a predator, right?
Correct. Cortisol triggers a process called gluconeogenesis, where the liver dumps massive amounts of glucose into the bloodstream to give your muscles instant energy to fight or flee.
But modern stress, like worrying about an email or a mortgage, doesn't require physical exertion.
Exactly. So that massive sugar dump just sits in your blood.
And then the pancreas has to release insulin to clean it up.
Exactly. The insulin surge drives the body to convert all that excess sugar into triglycerides and visceral fat. Over months and years, this perpetual cortisol loop deeply disturbs lipid metabolism, actively driving LDL numbers upward.
That is mind-blowing.
And chronic sleep deprivation getting under 7 hours triggers the exact same cortisol cascade.
So prioritizing 7 to 9 hours of sleep and like 10 minutes of daily meditation is quite literally cardiovascular medicine.
Without a doubt.
Speaking of extra tools to add to our daily routine, the source explicitly recommends plant sterols and stanols. What are these compounds?
Structurally, plant sterols are the botanical equivalent of cholesterol. Because their molecular shapes are nearly identical, when you consume them, they compete with human cholesterol for absorption sites in your digestive tract.
Oh, like someone stealing your seat on the bus.
Haha, exactly. If the plant sterol binds to the receptor, the actual dietary and biliary cholesterol cannot be absorbed, and it's just flushed out as waste.
That's amazing.
The clinical data shows that consuming roughly 2 grams of plant sterols daily, which you often find in fortified foods or supplements, can predictably drop LDL levels by up to 10%.
That is a phenomenal tool to stack on top of the dietary swaps. But finally, we have to address step 10, medical reality. There is a toxic narrative in wellness circles that requiring medication is somehow a personal failure. We need to completely destigmatize the use of statins.
It is such a critical conversation. The source material highlights familial hypercholesterolemia, which is a genetic condition affecting roughly 1 in 250 people.
That's pretty common.
It is. And for these individuals, a genetic mutation causes their liver to overproduce cholesterol and underabsorb it, totally regardless of their diet or stress levels.
You cannot meditate or eat enough oats to outrun your genetics. If a physician looks at a comprehensive lipid panel and prescribes statins, they're deploying a localized intervention that halts the liver's production of cholesterol right at the enzymatic level.
Yes. The clinical consensus is absolute here. Pharmaceutical intervention, when paired with the lifestyle modifications we've discussed, produces survival outcomes far superior to either strategy utilized alone.
So we should be getting tested regularly.
You should be testing your full lipid panel, total cholesterol, LDL, HDL, and triglycerides every 6 months.
Because it creates a profound feedback loop. I mean, our source authors successfully utilize these exact steps to drop their LDL from 180 down to 140 over a 12-month period.
Which is fantastic.
It really is. That is the tangible result of hundreds of micro decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Managing cholesterol is not a demand for absolute perfection. It is a commitment to the right direction. It's about trajectory.
Every single mechanical swap alters that trajectory. Replacing a pat of butter with extra virgin olive oil, delaying the garlic chopping to activate the allicin, or just taking the stairs to launch reverse cholesterol transport, they all compound.
They really do. Before we close out this deep dive, we want to leave you with a final thought to really mull over.
Yeah. Your heart is an astonishing biological engine. It beats roughly 100,000 times a day, pumping blood through thousands of miles of vessels without you ever having to consciously ask it to.
If it is working that relentlessly for you behind the scenes, what is the single easiest structural swap you can make today to finally say thank you?
That is the perfect question to reflect on.
Thank you for listening to the Pidcock Podcast. I will leave a link in the description below.
Subscribe to our channel if you haven't, and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads.
Also, press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. Thank you for being there with us, and don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating.
Until next time, keep optimizing those mechanisms.
Take care of yourselves.